Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of Stars Radio, your short track auto racing source, a production of the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. We're glad to be back here with another Monday night edition of the Stars Radio Show, and we got a great guest here tonight. Anybody that's raced up and down the East Coast, United States wide, definitely have heard of this gentleman here. I want to take the opportunity to welcome Philip Morris to Stars Radio. Welcome to Stars, Philip.
Hey, Jerry, thanks for having me on the show. It's always good to be talking to you because it means we're doing something right.
It sure is. It's always a good thing when we get a chance to talk to each other. Man, I love following Philip Morris Racing. I've been following your first heard about Philip Morris would have been in the late 80s, early 90s when I was living up in Virginia. And, man, what a racing career you've had, and you just highlighted it with a milestone that is just astronomical there at Motor Mile Speedway. You got your 100th win. Man, tell us a little bit about what it was like to be able to get that 100th win there at Motor Mile.
It was pretty exhilarating, and not only that, it was a little bit of a weight lifted off my shoulders because, as you can imagine, as we were honing in on that, it was taking longer and longer to get to it, and of course, fans were kind of focused on it, and so was the media up that way. So we had missed hitting that 100 for a couple weeks there in a row, so we were really happy to get it and be able to call it ours.
Well, Philip, you mentioned that it was taking a little bit longer. That just means the competition has got a lot stiffer along the way. Back in the day, you probably had 5, 6, maybe 7 guys that could win, and now at a lot of the racetracks you show up, you got 15 guys that can win on any given Saturday night.
Yeah, and that's the way it is at Motor Mile and in South Boston this year. It's been a lot of different winners, and, when the economy tanked, I had to go back to my business and sell trailers, and we've been back to racing now for a couple years, and when I got back, it was a lot to learn, and that was one of the hardest things to learn is that it was a lot of guys you had to beat now.
Absolutely. You got just some tremendous talent out there. And Philip, you've had a great career. You've got a racing resume that a lot of people would be proud of. You're a multi-time Whelen All-American national champion. Is it 4 or 5 times there, Philip?
The statisticians could tell you. That's weird. I don't like to count wins or championships. I think we're 4-time, and we've got some track champions along there that meant a whole lot to me. But this 100th win was it was icing on the cake. It really was. And it's not something I never really strived for accolades in racing. It was just always get the next win, and work hard towards the next thing, and all that kind of took care of itself.
And it did, I'm sure that the wins kind of racked up quickly. Like you say, you don't really count the wins, but there's people out there that was counting the wins for you, and next thing you know, you were sitting on that doorstep to winning that 100th win there at Motor Mile. I know you run down at South Boston some. Seems like that Motor Mile and South Boston was your two favorite tracks. Did you have an opportunity to go out and expand and run another track that you really liked that just may be a little bit too far to run on a regular basis?
Well, I love Myrtle Beach. I love Martinsville. On a weekly event, Myrtle Beach, just so far out there for us. It's like 8 hours or maybe longer. I can't remember. It's been so long since I've been there, but South Boston and Motor Mile are really the closest ones, and believe it or not, that's 3 hours for me. So, wow. Old Dominion's on the radar, and we've kind of been watching car count and seeing if we can't figure out a way to get out of a weekend and hit up that way and try to run some. But it's a long ways to places like Kinley and Concord, and it's just long hauls. I mean, I've had to do it. I even had to go down to Lonesome Pine, and I had to go down to some far off places, but. We're looking forward to maybe getting back into maybe since we're about halfway through the season and we're looking like things are kind of lining up for us. We're going to probably have to put a lot of events together here in the second half of the season.
Well, you mentioned Martinsville Speedway. That is, historic racetrack. Some of the greatest has raced there. And you've had an opportunity to go down there and run in the big late model race numerous times. And I believe you're the only 3-time winner of the Virginia's for Lovers 300 there. That's a racetrack race that if I don't get a chance to go to any other races all year long, I'm going to the late model race at the end of the year.
I feel the same way. It's one of those places that you have to be, especially if you're a race, if you're a true race fan, you're going to be there. And I've been there so many times, so I feel like we probably should have won more than that. But you know how Martinsville is, man. You can have the best car and not even finish, or you could have a 10th place car and somehow win the race. You know, it's one of those places that's really fun to go to. It's good for the fans. I've got a couple of grandfather clocks going off here right now. I'm listening to them, and they're fun to listen to, so I'm looking for another one maybe this year.
I hear you, man. I'd love to see you up there in Victory Lane. I remember back in the day, car count's only probably in the 80s nowadays, but I remember back in the late 80s, early 90s, when we used to go down to Martinsville, it'd be 125 to 150 cars there. So, you know, just making the show was an accomplishment in itself. But to walk away with one of them grandfather clocks, man, I just can't imagine how that feels to be a driver or on a team that's able to get one of those grandfather clocks.
Oh, there's a lot of guys that gun for that thing. And I remember back in the day when, you know, when we used to park nose to tail with the Cup guys, with Dale Earnhardt and Rusty Wallace, and, you know, our dualies would park right up to the grill of their Kenworths, and that was a fun time, and it made you feel pretty important to be that kind of racer. And then it got to be so important just to make the race. So, you know, technical inspection to get through that event just to qualify was incredible.
You're right, Lynn and Shane and them guys, they've really stepped their tech inspection up there at Martinsville. You see a lot of guys have to go through tech two and three times. You know, it might not have been that way, you know, back in the early days of the late model races down there, but there's always one thing you could count on at Martinsville, and that was competition. There was some stiff competition. I remember being there at a race in the 90s, and I think from like first to 20th locked in was just a tick over a tenth of a second. I mean, when you got 20 guys that close, you know it's going to be some great racing.
Yeah, there's a lot of parity there, and I think that's why the fans go, is they like to see the close racing. They like to see those that we call them Bobo races back in the day, you know, the qualifying races where you see cars get airborne and people get their teeth knocked out. It's just a lot of excitement there and something that we always look forward to.
Well, Philip, you know, you got a tremendous career and resume in the late model stock car racing world, but you've also had an opportunity to step out and do some Busch Series or Xfinity racing, whatever you want to call it. It's still Busch Series to me, and I believe you even run a few truck races. Tell us a little bit about moving up and running the upper tiers of NASCAR.
I think it was good for me to do that. I had an advantage when I first started. I went to Rockingham for my first race. I think it was around 1998, and it was Halloween night, if I remember right. And I probably didn't have the best equipment, but I had no fear, and that was something that really helped me through that race, just, you know, charging the corners and getting back to the gas and about running over people. I had a lot of people telling me I was number one when I got around them because I was a little rough, but it got us to the front, and I feel like if we hadn't lost the exhaust system that night in our last pit stop, we would have won that race because we had everybody beat by a bunch. But, you know, everything happens for a reason, and I found out that really wasn't the series for me. I mean, I'm just a country guy from Ruckersville, and I like to be at home with my kids, and my family's all from around this area, so it was hard for me to be away, and I did it for a while, and I went to places like Charlotte and Texas and Talladega and Vegas. I went to some really fun tracks like Vegas, and I had a lot of fun, but it was one of those things that was just reassuring and confirming for me that I'm in the right place in late model. And I brought a lot of that technology back in 2001 and really applied it, and I had one of the best cars I ever had at Martinsville and won that year, just killed them. And so it was really good for me. I probably have some cobwebs because I've hit the wall pretty hard in Busch cars and trucks, and it's 180 miles an hour. I've got some cobwebs at 52 years old, so but it all works towards good.
Well, 52 years old, I just gotta rub this into my producer Jeff C. He's younger than you too, there, buddy. We have a little bit of fun going back and forth about age there, Philip. Somebody sent me a question here, Philip, and they want me to ask you. And I know this is going to be a really, really hard question for you, but can you name some of the toughest late model drivers that you've had to compete with from start to finish?
There's a lot of them because I've been doing this, like I said, for a long time. I think I moved over to late models in 95. I started dabbling, and 97, I was in it wide open. And but I when I came on the scene, there was guys like Ronnie Thomas and David Blankenship and, you know, Eddie Johnson and you know, Johnny Rumley. I mean, it's some true, you know, everybody talks about Dale Earnhardt, the Intimidator. I'm telling you, there's guys that were like that in late model back in the day that were just stone cold. I mean, they were tough. I mean, you had to be tough to race against them. And but, I mean, you know, David Blankenship ranks right up there. I mean, he's one of the guys that's probably the smoothest on the wheel, you know, in a race car, and didn't have to have the best race car, and somehow he would beat you. And I can tell you, that gave me more determination than anything else. Him and Jeff Agnew, you know, just so smooth on the wheel and consistent. And, you know, as a young driver, I was pretty inconsistent, and I wanted to go really fast, and then sometimes I'd go real slow because I burned my stuff up. But, you know, there's just a lot of guys, and if you remember back then, you know, it was just a lot of really tough and mean and career late model guys that weren't going to go anywhere but that track, and you wouldn't take in their track from them.
Oh, you're right. I remember one that we used to run against down at Franklin County, and he run up at Motor Mile Sun, and that was Frankie Pennington. Man, he was a tough one. I seen Frankie win a race one night down at Franklin County Speedway. He'd drop a cylinder, and they come in, pulled the plug wire off, and went back out. He didn't lose no laps. And next thing you know, he's coming through the field, and we're like, wait a minute, nah. Hell, we just saw that plug wire get pulled off. How's he coming back through the field here, you know? But it was drive and determination, and he told us after the race that he thought this car was just as fast on seven cylinders. He didn't have a straightaway speed, but he said, man, I can drive it deep in the corner, so...
I raced for Frankie back. I mean, we both came from Eastside Speedway. Frankie used to sell tires and stuff, and you know, and I raced him in late models. And you know, him and I were both kind of up against the same thing. It was Buzzy Walters and a lot of guys that had been running dirt track forever. And you know, we didn't just trade paint. Me and Frankie, we traded body panels. I mean, it was some hard door slapping. But we had a lot of fun with it, you know, and you could probably see that in the way he drives. But it's just been a lot of guys that showed me a lot, you know, Roy Hendrick at Southside Speedway, and you know, just a lot of really good steady drivers that really knew what they were doing and really smooth on the wheel. And you know, like I just mentioned, I probably hit the wall at some of the better, faster late model tracks before they put soft walls on. But I guess I probably got the worst cobwebs at Southside, getting turned around and slammed in the door there, you know. It's just some really nice bull rings that I went to and cut my teeth on, and it's really helped me now. You know, it's even though I've got, you know, might see me stutter every once in a while, you know, or just check up, but really taught me a lot.
Well, you know, it's maturity. You know, you've learned a lot as you went along in your racing there, and you learn a lot by just watching the other guys in your early part of your career and everything. And, you know, some of that comes back in shows at a later age. But I got another question here for you. Tim, but I don't know who Tim is, so I can't tell you what Tim's last name is. But he asked me, did you once have Burger King as a sponsor on your race car?
Yeah, that's kind of where I came from. The guy that had the stores here in my neighborhood just took a liking to us, saw some potential there, and he sponsored me on dirt track. And I probably had one of the best-looking dirt track cars because of their help. You know, we tried to look professional even when we were, you know, coming home with no body panels. But, yeah, Burger King, Mountain Valley Corporation, they helped me. And I even had some sponsors like Kawasaki on the car when you weren't supposed to put green on. Really had some good sponsors. But Burger King stayed with me all the way up until Asphalt Late Model. And they carried me as far as they could. You know, it got pretty expensive when we got into the Busch Series and trucks. But they did the best they could to get me where I needed to be. And God rest his soul, the old man passed away that owns those stores. But he was such a benefactor to me.
Well, the second part of Tim's question is, did you ever wear the Burger King crown after a victory?
Oh, yeah, we would go up in the restaurants after the race, and we would all have those kitty crowns on, and, you know, not just trying to you know, be uppity or anything like that, but just to celebrate and have a good time and really enjoy racing for what it is. It's a hobby. It's a sport. It's fun. It's exciting, and we tried to live it to the fullest back then, and nowadays you got to be careful when you do stuff like that because people think you're trying to be highfalutin.
Right. Well, obviously, this Tim guy must have followed your career along the way because he knows a little bit about your racing there.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah.
So you may know who Tim is, but I don't know who Tim is. He just keeps sending me messages here. I do got a one more question here for you. This was from Sarah Best, and she wants to know, are you any kin to the Philip Morris Cigarette Company?
Well, Sarah, I wish I was. Well, sometimes I do. When I see them in court, I feel bad for them, and I'm glad I'm not. But I think I got named after the company because of all the commercials you saw back in the day. It was very popular, and my name spelled the same way, Philip Morris. And we were kind of hoping to be able to capitalize on that with Marlboro or something. But as you know, when I came into the series, it was the Winston Racing Series, which is a competitor, RGR Reynolds. And, you know, I basically had to change my name a little bit just to be able to disassociate with them because they didn't want to say that name, you know, with right. The sponsorships that they had in place. So it really never did help me, but it would sure have been nice to have been connected in some way, but never did kind of pursue it. I figured, you know, we had some great sponsors along the way, but never did get that one.
Wow. Well, you mentioned some of the sponsors and some of the people that's helped you out along the way, and I want to give you an opportunity to recognize some of the people that's helped you in your racing career, other than the ones you've already mentioned. And I know there's been a lot of them along the way, but I'm sure there's some that's been extra special and been instrumental in your racing career.
Yeah, and it goes all the way back to, you know, when you're a race car driver, when you're young, you don't get a lot sometimes, and it's always nice to thank people that helped you along the way. And I had places like Stark Powell Salvage Yard down the road from me sponsor me, and they don't ever know what that meant to me. An old man, Stark, he's passed away now, but his son's still around, and his son comes into my business. I give him stuff all the time because I so much appreciate it. RHT Auto Sales gave me a Chevelle, a 1973 Chevelle that he let me gut out. He had it on his lot now, air conditioned. I drove it home and gutted it out, turned it into a race car. And if he had not done that, my career might have stopped right there because I had totaled my car the week before. But I've had companies like, you know, like we talked about, Burger King, Mountain Valley Corporation. I had, you know, Spencer and Brown, who is still on my car, has always been on my car in late models. Calvin's still doing great, still has his, you know, his place there, and he comes to the racetrack even today, and he's always been, you know, a benefactor to me and not somebody I've looked up to my whole life, giving me good advice even in the Busch Series, was a partner to us. But we had, you know, we had sponsors like Power Monitors Incorporated out of Harrisonburg, you know, companies that really couldn't afford to do a whole Busch Series would give us $35,000 to go to track like Rockingham and just take a chance, roll up the dice, and almost win the thing. Gave them a little bit of sponsorship, and you know, gave them a little TV time, and just had a lot of fun. Still have some great sponsors. You know, my company, Trailertown USA, they're kind of footing the bill completely, but almost everybody recognizes me or associates me with Clarence's Steakhouse because we won a lot of races together, championships. We had a lot of fun. They were a sponsor that let me focus on racing, didn't send me out to trade shows and, you know, and store openings and, you know, a lot of things that distract you from competition because their goal was to win races. You know, they sell some of the greatest steaks right there in Martinsville. But their goal for me was to win races. They want the 26 and the Clarence Steakhouse car in victory lane, and we did that a lot for them, and they did a lot for us. So, yeah, just been a lot of great sponsors, and if the race car drivers are out there listening now, they know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, just sometimes it means being able to have tires or fuel to get to the track or, you know, whatever, body panels to make the car look good or maybe get a freshen up in the motor that you would have blown up if you hadn't gotten it freshened up. So it those guys mean a lot to this sport.
Well, you know, some of the best late model stock car racers that's ever raced has come through that 2016 Clarence and his team that he's always put together down there, and you truly represented them just like anyone else that has drove that number 26 car. Just a great man. Man, you couldn't ask for a better person down there, and every time I'm in that area, I'm going to stop at Clarence's Steakhouse and eat because of his support for our racing that we all enjoy there. Philip, you've had some people that's helped worked on your race cars along the way and some people who you know, is always there when something needs to be done in the garage, no matter what they got going on, they're there to work on the car. So won't you recognize some of those people who's helped you out?
Yeah, I have guys that have been with me for quite a long time and some that, you know, even went back as far as some dirt track racing and Bobby McCoy, he was one of those guys that just got in there, whether we were at a bush track or we were at a dirt track, you know, those guys would just step in. But I had some, you know, and his son, Chad McCoy, helps me today. And even today, I've got some of the best crew guys. My car builder is Forrest Reynolds, and almost everybody recognizes his name now because about everywhere you hear cars in Victory Lane, they have to say Forrest Reynolds. You know, of course, my engine builders have really given me good stuff, and Daryl Poe with Poe Performance has really gone out of his way to make sure we got that 100th win. And once, you know, these guys want a shot at the national title this year, so they've really worked hard. But I've had crew chiefs through the past that just have been incredible. Roger Severa, Sammy Houston, H.C. Sellers. I've had some really good crew chiefs that helped me along the way. Even in the Busch Series, I had some guys that, you know, a lot of people didn't even recognize their name, and they were helping us working on their car and then went on to be crew chiefs in the Cup Series. It's been pretty incredible, good ride. And the guys that I've gotten the chance to work with shoulder to shoulder is really what's made it for me. I mean, those are the guys that really, you know, and other drivers will tell you this. When you see a guy work all night with you, that's what motivates you to keep on going every week, because in yourself you'll give up because you think maybe you're fighting a losing battle. But when you have a team around you that rallies around you, even on a night when you knock both clips off and, you know, get everything stripped, and that guy jumps in the truck after working for about 20 hours and takes it all the way down to Carolina to get it fixed, you know, then that's what motivates you to go from, you know, just being maybe every so often get to race to being a regular and winning championships and winning 100 races at one speedway.
Man, you're absolutely right, and I've been fortunate enough to be involved in some great teams myself, and you're hitting the nail on the head there. Another question I have for you, our question buddy, his question is, the car that you took to Rockingham and did so good in, was that a Dale Earnhardt Incorporated race car?
That is a car that Dale Jr. specifically liked, and, you know, they kind of wanted to get rid of old equipment, but he really liked that one particular car, and we didn't have any horsepower to speak of. We had a motor in the car that we bought. We might have bought it from them. I can't remember. I bought the car off his dad, and he had ran it at Darlington. I think he finished fifth in Darlington, and then we got it. I mean, you can imagine the car was sandblasted. You couldn't even tell what color it was in the front because of the, you know, the debris that hit you at Darlington. But we got the car back, painted it, kind of left it the same colors, and we got a motor from somebody that was 3 years old and outdated. And we went down to Rockingham, and the crew chief I had, he had been in that series for a while, so he put a setup under the car, Neil Perkins. And well, I remember we worked all night, and I think I got interviewed with, you know, the 5 o'clock shadow, which took me 3 days to get. But we went there and just really killed them. I mean, it was just something. It was fun. And, you know, sometimes you look back on times like that and you say, what if? But that, you know, I found out that really wasn't the place for me because I wanted to be in the late model series where I could still have a family life during the week. And I got to talk to all those guys that are running now, Jimmy Johnson and Mark Martin, and a lot of those guys that I got to race with and trade paint with and have fun. It turned out, you know, this is the right place for Philip Morris to race in the late model series.
Well, Philip, if people want to keep up with your racing for the remainder of the 2016 season, where's the best place for them to go get that information? Hello? Jeff, you still there?
I'm still here. Look, the phone line shows that Philip's still there, but I'm not hearing him.
Well, sorry that we lost Philip there. I'll give him a call after this and let him know that we couldn't hear him there. It's time for us to get out of here for the evening anyway. But I know if you want to, philipmorris.com is his website if you want to go and follow Philip and keep up with what's going on there. He has Philip Morris Racing on Facebook. You can search that and find out and keep up what's going on. Looking forward to seeing Philip in Victory Lane many more times here in the 2017 season. Folks, it's time to get out of here. We appreciate everybody who tunes in and listens to us. Our military unit of the week has the U.S. Army 1st Regiment in Augsburg, Germany. You guys are our military unit of the week. We appreciate all our military for what they do. Jeff, are we going to do a show next Monday night?
No, being we're, off. The third we're off.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I was correct on that. So, folks, we will not be back here next week on the 3rd. On the 10th of July, we're going to have Anna Parkhurst, who was part of the driver development program for Richard Childress Racing, running.
Bimini's Oyster Bar and Seafood Cafe has been serving nothing but the freshest shellfish and fish since 1985, beginning with the original location in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and now including an inland location in Greenville, South Carolina. A local's favorite, Bimini's offers live entertainment in season in a year-round vacation atmosphere. Take a trip to the islands inland. Bimini's Oyster Bar, where there are no bad days. Check out the events calendar on the website at www.bimini'soysterbar.com or click the banner here on Shack City, USA.
Into a racing family, January 1955. Daddy worked at the local speed shop. Saturday nights he raced a modified. Never saw too many high school football games. Saturday nights racing was the rule. But on my father and son night, Daddy brought the race cars to school. What I live for, it's the only life I've ever known. And if I died